And somebody passed me a piece of paper earlier, a little story about, on the radio, I think they said, there was an Aboriginal woman who said that she didn't want to be tolerated. And everybody thought that was a wonderful statement. And it opens up, what actually we mean by tolerance? And does actually tolerating somebody else, is that the right attitude which we should have? Is that being a bit patronizing to them and not really looking at the root problems, which why should you need to tolerate somebody in the first place? Is that an inherent put down of that person or their behavior or their status in society? It also starts to bring up other areas where we say we should tolerate misdemeanors of people in your family, or aches and pains in your body, or difficulties in life. And sometimes the word tolerance can be an excuse just for not really doing your duties. So this evening I'm going to explore what we mean by tolerance. And I'm going to start in an easy area, because you know, sometimes sitting meditation you have aches and pains in this body. Now, I'm getting older now. I just had my 56th birthday a few days ago. But it was very fortunate that before I went to, the day before the birthday, I had an invitation. It's really interesting being a monk, because I think the week before I said that I went to a morning tea with the Archbishop of York, and he was the second in command of the worldwide Anglican Church. And just before my birthday, I went to an evening with Sir Roger Penrose, who is one of the most famous physicists in the world. He's the fellow who discovered black holes. And while we were there, somebody was mentioning that this universe, which we're sitting in right now, is about 13,000 million years old. Imagine that number, 13,000 million. So the following day, when I was 56, I realized I wasn't that old. It made me feel quite young. But anyhow, being like going into these different parts of society, you know, sometimes as you do get old, you do get more achy, more pains, more difficulties, more sicknesses. And this is the first part with like tolerance. When you do have a pain or a sickness in the body, should you really be tolerating it? Obviously, if there's something you can do, you go and see a doctor, you take a Panadol, or you do something to try and ease that ache and pain in the body. But where tolerance can sometimes be applied is where there's nothing you can take, there's nothing you can do physically to get rid of that ache or pain. But one of the teachings which had been drummed into me from my training as a monk, especially in the early years, if there is a sickness or a pain which for one reason or another cannot be cured or there's no medicine you can take, you don't just endure it and just grit your teeth and say, I'm just going to tolerate this. What I was always taught is to understand it, investigate, learn from it. So it wasn't just tolerance, say, this is awful, this is terrible, I've got to bear with this, it must be some karma from the past. Now, I used to have very bad hay fever. It must have been because in my previous life I punched an enlightened person on the nose, and that's why I have to suffer from hay fever in this life. That sort of attitude was certainly, you know, not wisdom, that was not Buddhism, that was nothing to do with the right attitudes. What I was always told was actually investigate these things which upset you, which irritate you, which give you pain or discomfort. Don't just sit there and tolerate it and wait for it to go, but find out what it's there to teach you. And I found that a much better attitude to deal with those aches and pains which I had in life, to actually get into it so you could understand it. And I wonder, a strange thing happens, actually, when you don't just tolerate and just like resist, and just sort of sit here and just bear with it. But when actually you just go into that sickness or into that pain or ache, because your aim now is to understand it. And to understand something, you've got to empathize with it. You've got to get in there and find out what it really feels like. And so instead of tolerating things, which was like a negative, just stand back and wait for it to disappear, there was something more engaging and active in investigating the irritations of your body, the things you didn't like. Because what I found, and what each one of you will find, if you have an ache or a pain in the body, or a sickness, or sort of a bone break or whatever, so often, because we resist and we try and escape, we tense up around that area of the pain. That's what an inflammation is, sort of tensing up around that part of the sickness, so you can't really get in there and find out what's going on. But whenever you actually go into a pain or into a discomfort, you know, even with your mind, to investigate, feel it right in the middle, you find even already that sort of sickness or that ache or that pain tends to ease a little bit. Because a lot of times our mental reaction to pain is to actually squash up. Whereas the result of actually investigation is, oh, this is interesting. You actually embrace it and the thing loosens up. Sometimes resistance, you know, tends to squash things and make them more tense. Investigation, going into something, tends to expand it more and make it more loose. So just even the intention of going in to find out what's going on, sometimes even that gives you a payoff, a result straight away, where the irritation gets much less. The reason is because the irritations, the discomforts, the physical pains, they always have a mental counterpart. And that mental counterpart to physical discomfort is, I don't want this, I don't like this, I want to escape, I want to go somewhere where that pain isn't. And that's always what we call the mental part of the pain. But when you investigate something, you're not trying to get rid of it mentally, you're not having the medical, the negative mental part to the irritation or the pain. That part is being abandoned because you're investigating. You want to see this. You want this to be here, at least for these few moments, so you can understand it. So the mental rejection has been abandoned, and in its place there's an acceptance and wanting to find out what's going on. The mental part has been overcome. That makes things much less irritating and painful. Also, you can see when you go into physical pain, trying to understand it, often you can actually find solutions to actually what's there and what needs to be done. So whether it's just relaxing. I don't know how many times that people get physical aches and pains, and what it really is the body telling you, you've been working too hard, sit down, take a break, have a rest. Especially say you get headaches. And why do you get a headache? Because you've been looking at that computer screen far too long. You just need to take a bit of time out. And I don't know how many times I've mentioned this to, especially to people in our modern age. Taking time out from your computer screen, from your job, from whatever you're doing, is not slacking off. You're not wasting time. You are making yourself more efficient. In the same way that when you went to school, you always used to have a break in the morning, lunchtime, and the school I went to, you had a break in the afternoon. And even in, you know, the great British Empire, one of the reasons the British Empire was so successful was because you used to have a tea break in the morning and a tea break in the afternoon. In other words, they could relax a little bit. So after the tea break, they could actually go back to running their empire. I don't know, but certainly being able to sort of rest and relax when you were at school meant that after the playtime or after the lunch break, you were bright, you were fresh, you were rested, the brain could now go back to work. But what happens these days in our workplace, you are working, I don't know how many hours straight, without giving your brain a rest, no wonder you get headaches. No wonder you feel stressed, and you cannot work to your full potential when your brain is that tired. So actually, when you do feel this stress, instead of trying to get rid of it or trying to ignore it and just tolerating it, investigate it. What does it feel like and why? And as you do investigate it rather than trying to get rid of it, solutions come up. You feel, yeah, this is right. I just need to take a break for 1 or 2 minutes. And if you can take that break for 1 or 2 minutes, you go back to your work afterwards, you feel fresh, a little bit more relaxed and able actually to do that work. Exactly the same way as a problem, you don't know how to solve it, how many times you keep thinking, how can I solve this, what should I do? Stop it for goodness sake, go and take a break, and then solutions come up quite naturally when you're not thinking about them. The more you push it, the more difficult it is to see what you need to do. So this is investigating. Rather than just tolerating and waiting for it to disappear, you're actually being more proactive, understanding how this body works. And sometimes when you do investigate the aches and the pains, you can actually investigate where the causes come from. You know quite clearly why you're feeling this way, where that sickness came from, because you're not just trying to get rid of it, you're trying to understand it. So whenever there is a negative physical feeling, instead of just bearing with it and tolerating it, if you can't get rid of it with some medicine or something, understand it. And sometimes when we're understanding it, if it cannot disappear, then another level of understanding comes up. And that obviously understanding is yes, that sometimes there's some aches and pains, sicknesses, which we'll never be able to get rid of. It's part of being a human being, you know, to have aches, pains and sicknesses. But this is not just tolerating it like blindly, it's understanding what these feelings are and how they relate. As a Buddhist monk, whenever we do have like aches and pains, one of the things which we do to understand them even deeper, not just tolerating them and bearing with them, is we realize that these are just that. They're aches, they're pains, they're physical feelings. But they're not belonging to me. They're not my feelings. In other words, I haven't done something wrong. I don't feel guilty for the aches and pains in my body. Unfortunately, in our modern life, if you are sick, sometimes you are made to feel guilty. You are sick, it means that you have not been eating enough brown rice. That you have not been exercising enough. You've been eating too many fatty foods. You've been working too hard. It's your fault. I don't know if you've ever felt sick and felt so guilty. I did once. I remember going to the doctor in Byford many years ago. I felt sick. And I was sitting there waiting to be called in. And at that particular time, I was teaching meditation in many of the prisons in Perth. And it so happened that one of the local prison officers also had an appointment that morning. And he came into the doctor's surgery and looked at me and saw me and remembered me and recognized me. And he said, "I didn't expect to see you in here." And I felt so guilty. I'm supposed to be a Buddhist monk, living a healthy lifestyle without any stress. And there I was in the doctor's surgery. Even monks get sick, come on. But Dada, have you ever felt sort of guilty when you're sick, as if you are doing something wrong? And again, so we understand there's nothing wrong with being sick. And if you are sick, enjoy it. Don't have to go to work. All these people looking after you. And if it's terminal sickness, wow, a few more days and I'm out of here. Can you do that? Well, people have often noticed this, that so many religions, Buddhism included, we believe in some afterlife. And as long as you keep coming to the Buddhist center every Friday, it means when you die, you go to heaven. As long as you keep up your subscriptions and you return all your library books on time. So, but it's obvious, there's lots of really good people here. And if you're a good person, why on earth are you afraid of death? go to some heaven realm. It's going to be nice up there. Why are you afraid of, you know, get it over and done with as soon as you can to get up there and enjoy yourself? If you were going on a holiday somewhere, imagine your dream holiday. I mean, where would you like to go? You know, if you sort of won some lottery and they said, you can go anywhere in the world, first class, five-star accommodation, wherever you want to go in the world, wouldn't you be excited? You'd be counting the days to get there? Well, heaven is supposed to be even better than that. So you should be counting the days. Oh, great. One more day closer to my coffin. Wow. So, you have to laugh at that because there's a lot of truth in it, isn't there? So why are we so afraid? So we can investigate if we have like a very bad illness and terminal. Why? Understand it. Investigate. Why are we so afraid of dying? Why are we so afraid of pain? So whenever we do have these physical difficulties, don't just tolerate it. Learn and understand from it. It's a gift. It's an opportunity. It's a moment where you can get under the skin of sickness to empathize with dying or getting old, to really get to know it. Because in that knowing of something, there's always freedom. I know that the Buddha said this, but many people say this as well these days. The biggest problem, the biggest pain and suffering is fear. And fear is always because we don't understand and know these things. Fear is always the fear of the unknown. And if we can know things, understand them, fear disappears. And of course the biggest fear for many people here, because we always have a lot of people who are born in Asia, some of their biggest fears is ghosts. And I don't know why that is. If you could only know a ghost and get to understand them, get to empathize with them. Imagine, put yourself, you know, in the shoes of a ghost, what it feels like. Ghosts in our modern society feel so rejected. No one loves them. They come and see you, have a nice conversation. What do you do? Go, get out of here. They're only trying to be friendly. But people keep running away. Imagine that was you. You go up to someone and the first thing they do is scream and run away. How would you feel? So please have a bit of compassion for the ghosts in this world. But the point is, when you understand these things, the fear disappears. This is what I mean about the sickness and the aging and the dying. When you understand it, not just tolerating it, the problem mostly vanishes. And it's the same of other things in life. The things we don't understand. I mean, what that Aboriginal woman may have been saying, it's very hard for me to sort of second guess this. It was only a short paragraph which I read. Maybe she was saying that, I don't want tolerance, I want understanding. I want to understand how I feel, you know, what I go through every day. That empathy. So if there is an irritation there, or sort of, you know, an inability to sort of contact, to embrace, because it's some part of that person which makes it difficult for you, I always say why. Get in there and understand. To investigate rather than just tolerate, so you can really understand. Now let's go a little bit more to your common experience. How many of you are just tolerating your partner? You got married a long time ago, and it's just more easy just to stay with them than to go to the lawyer and get the separation. And is that actually what your relationship is like? Maybe it's not all the time. Maybe, you know, a lot of the time you love having a wonderful time. But there's sometimes you need to just really get irritated and upset. Don't just sort of, you know, sit there and just bear with it. Try and understand what's going on. empathize with the other person, get under their skin, find out what's going on, rather than just tolerating it. And if you can understand, sometimes you're amazing just what you can really understand. What you actually find out. And you say, well, why are they saying that? Why do they feel like that? And even the very fact you are trying to understand, just like with pain, just the very fact you're not rejecting it, but you're going into it and finding some understanding. In a relationship, if your partner is doing that to you, they're trying to understand why you're upset. That's half the problem. Maybe 60, 80% of the problem. To understand the person's not just tolerating and rejecting you. They're trying to understand. They're trying to get in there and just become wise, rather than just bearing with it and being as stupid as ever. Because with the understanding and investigation is a promise of growth, and even maybe a solution. So whenever there is that problem even in married life, don't just bear with it. Don't just look at yourself either. Try to find out what the other person is feeling, why they're feeling that way. Investigate and understand. And again, sometimes it's that attitude of trying to get to feel and understand what's going on. Sometimes that is enough. But often you get much more than that. You start to feel why. You grow, they grow, you both grow together. So, with people in our society who have got any difficulties, whether it's Aboriginal people or refugees, or people who are somehow different than us, there's many people here, I don't know, maybe most people here, have come into this country and have experienced rejection. Or even myself, because when I came to Australia, I was a monk, and you always used to go around, you know, all the time in these robes. It was wonderful, so the sort of things which people used to say to me when I was, you know, first in this country 25 years ago. Now, you're dressed like a girl. You're a sicko. Why did you get a proper job, kind of people? You're just a bunch of bludgeon monks. Whatever it was. Because obviously there's a lot of rejection because Buddhism was completely unknown. No one actually knew what it was, whether it was some weirdo religion. A lot of people would go to Thailand and all they knew from Thailand was Buddha, Buddha grass. It was a name of type of marijuana. So go up to you and say, you know, you got any for me? So no, we're not, we're monks. We don't get into that. I don't know where you got that idea from, but that's nothing to do with Buddhism. But that's what people used to do when they went to Thailand 25 years ago. However, it was wonderful actually to be understood and to understand other people and why they would say those things. So you weren't just tolerating sort of that situation, nor were you trying to sort of aggressively sort of change that situation. You're trying to understand it. And it's the understanding, the wisdom, gives you solutions and eventually gives you the freedom. And should we tolerate sort of violence and fundamentalism in our communities? It's a huge thing, you know, in our political world. Whether it's Christian fundamentalists, Islamic fundamentalists, I don't know, maybe even Buddhist fundamentalists. You know, should we tolerate that? If we just tolerate and think, oh, just let them do whatever they want to do, it's a very, very dangerous political stance to make, because these are real bombs which kill real people, which threaten maybe even you. So how can, what's the right attitude there? Obviously it's not tolerance, in the sense, oh, just leave it alone, someone will fix it up. I always want to say to go to understanding. That's why going to see somebody like the Archbishop of York, you know, hanging out with some rabbis, or especially with the Catholic monks over at Eunorcia, understanding people who are different than you is a great way of solving the problems of fundamentalism in this world. Get under another person's skin and feel what it's like. Because when there's an understanding there, straight away, just like with physical feelings, because it's that, not that mental block, You are connecting with another person, understanding them. Just that gesture sometimes is enough. And friendship. The very fact that you're making an effort to understand them means that they very often reciprocate by making an effort to understand you. And isn't that what friendship is all about? Learning about each other, and from what we gather from each other, to become richer in ourselves, in the way that we live and understand and grow in our life. But anyway, there's a joke about many religions. So this is today's joke, which I hope many people have been waiting for. I saw a few people with their heads down, so getting a bit bored. It's an old joke I said many, many years ago, but it's been several years since I mentioned the joke about there was a Jewish rabbi, an Anglican priest, a Catholic priest, and a Buddhist monk. And they just had an interfaith session, and they were just broke for lunch, and they were very friendly with each other. They got to know each other for a long time. And so just after lunch, they were sitting down there, and the Jewish rabbi said, you know, we've been friends for such a long time, and, you know, sometimes it's very hard for me to say, you know, these things to my other sort of co-religionists, because, you know, if this got out, my reputation would be ruined. I just need to say to somebody that I've got a problem. And the other, you know, the Anglican, the Buddhist, and the Catholic said, what's your problem? You can tell us, because, you know, we're not Jews. We won't tell anybody else. And he said, well, actually, my problem is I'm a gambler. He said, you know, when people aren't watching, I go on the internet and gamble. You know, sometimes, you know, I go in disguise down to Burswood. I lose a lot of money. He said, I'm addicted to gambling, and I can't tell anybody else because I'm a rabbi, and people will not really understand. I'll lose my reputation, even my job. You know, and the other sort of whole, you know, the religious people said, well, actually, it's a wonderful thing you tell us this, because, you know, when you actually open up to somebody else, you're opening up to yourself, and there's actually a possibility you might do something about it. So they really praised him. And the rabbi said, well, it was really hard to get this off my chest, but I feel so much better afterwards. Does any one of you want to sort of admit your faults? And the Anglican stopped for a few moments. He looked very serious. Okay, he said. I didn't really want to tell this to anybody. If it gets back to my church, I'm done for. He said, just, you know, after the communion on Sunday, any wine left over, drink it all up. Not only that, but just back in my room, any bottles of whiskey. He said, I'm an alcoholic. And I've hidden it for all these years. No one knows, sort of, I'm a bad alcoholic. And they were quite surprised. He looked such a good guy. But they said, it's good at least you let us know. And they looked at the next one in line, was the Catholic. What about you? He said, oh, it's much worse. Much, much, much worse. What is it? He said, can I not tell you, please? And they said, no, please, you must tell us. And so he took a sigh and he says, it's adultery. But worse than that, sort of, I'm going with the husband of one of my parishioners. I'm a gay adulterer. Well, that was terrible, they said. A person in your position, do things like that, but at least you let us know. And that's wonderful, you can get it off your chest. And then he looked at the Buddhist monk. And the Buddhist monk looked at the clock and said, it's about time we went back. He said, no, there's plenty of time. Come on, what's your worst fault? And he looked at his three friends, the rabbi, the Anglican priest, and the Catholic priest. Look, I can't tell you. Please, I just can't tell you. He said, you can tell us. It can't be anything worse than gambling, alcoholism, and gay adultery. What can be worse than that? He said, friends, it's much, much worse than that. Don't ask me. I'm sure you're all thinking, what can be worse? What can be worse than all these three? And he said, please don't make me tell you. But there's no way out. They forced him to tell. And he said, my problem, and I try to stop it, I just can't. I'm a gossip. So that's a joke this evening. Those of you who want to go now, can go now. You got the joke for this evening. It shows you all the things you should tolerate. What's the worst and the most dangerous? But anyway, where we understand that, why do actually people do sort of these things? And it's an interesting story, just taking it seriously. Why is it we just hide, you know, these so-called faults or idiosyncrasies or, you know, bad things which we do? Again, because a lot of times we think we'll be criticized and punished, rejected, rather than being understood. Because tolerating some of these bad actions, it's not the way to go. You can't tolerate somebody who hurts someone else. But punishing them, does that really help? In questions of law and order, is one of the things which I think is a dysfunctional aspect of our legal code, is punishment. Even actually today, I just got a letter from a fellow in a United States prison who's got 2 life sentences plus 30 years. The guy will never get out of jail. He will die there. And obviously he did a terrible crime. He never mentioned what it was. But whatever it was, so we can see from his letter, he's really trying to change and do something good in his life. Trying to be understood, forgiven, and accepted. He's not looking for tolerance. He's looking for an opportunity to grow. What in circles we call the rehabilitation rather than the punishment. Because what happens with punishment is the opposite of tolerance, and this understanding is this third way. Punishment, you've done something wrong, I'm going to beat you, put you in jail, execute you or whatever. What's the result of that? It just drives the problems further underground. It never really solves anything. A lot of time when there's punishments, just people just escape. They hide. They just don't get caught. Just like when there's punishments for you. When I was punished as a kid, all I learned from that punishment was not to get caught next time, to be cleverer. But I never really understand why. There's a problem there. I needed understanding. Again, not just tolerance, just boys being boys, kids being kids, politicians being politicians. And understanding, why does a politician get in that situation where they have to lie and just compromise their morality? Why are they in that situation? Why are people put in that situation? Why do we get ourselves in that situation in the first place? And more importantly, how can we get out of that and move on and away and become better human beings? So the understanding, instead of the punishment, instead of the blind forgiveness or tolerance, the understanding is, I always think, the way forward, the Buddhist way forward. Finding out, why did you want to do that in the first place? Why? What's the reason? What's the cause? It's a possibility of, you know, finding some way of making amends and maybe moving forward. And I think that for what I've read of inspiring cases, people who have, you know, done the worst crimes, who are given a second chance, become some of the most wonderful, helpful human beings on this earth. Because they know what it's like to be in the gang. They know what it's like to have killed. When they go and see another kid who's about to do the same thing, who's in the same situation that they were in, they understand. They can connect, empathize, meet mind to mind with that other, if you like, delinquent or whatever. And they're the ones who can take them, take their hand, take their mind and lead them on another path where no one else can. You see that even people who have done the worst of crimes can be a great resource, can actually help and stop these things reoccurring. Which is why it's not just tolerance, it's not punishment, it's not just, okay, just forgive the guys and girls, whatever, and just let them out. Can't we make use of this? Investigate, grow, and make a better world out of this, rather than throwing people away. One thing which I always say, that no human being needs to be thrown away. Even the worst of human beings, so-called worst of human beings, they've got some amazing qualities. If they could only be focused on, allowed to grow, and allowed to bloom. It's amazing what people could provide for others and for themselves. It's not only a human being, it's even situations in life. No situation in life needs to be rejected. You can always learn, grow, and benefit from it. That's why I call the terrible situations in life, I call them growing pains. It's not just like a saying, just growing pains, so it's, you know, to tolerate them. It's where you learn from, where you grow from, where you become better human beings. Similarly, I gave this evening, it's like sometimes in life, life is like being like the bud of a flower. Imagine you are like a flower in bud. This big, tight ball, and inside are these flower petals growing and growing and growing. And the pressure inside that bud sometimes is intolerable. In this metaphor, that means some of the problems and difficulties you face in life sometimes are almost unbearable. You know, a situation with a child who's got cancer, you know, a relationship which is going really difficult, or with another job or job prospects which are just really hard. Whatever it is in your life, sometimes you do get these problems and difficulties in your life. Imagine that that is like being a flower bud. The pressures are almost unbearable. But the nice part of this simile is that soon it bursts. When it bursts from that problem, from that pressure, from that tightness and difficulty where you can't see which way to go, a beautiful flower comes out. And the flowers are so delicate, fragrant, and amazing. But every flower has come from that tight, pressure, painful bud. This is why that if you look at the difficulties and problems like that, that you're in the stage just before flowering. It gives you a positive slant on the difficulties of life. Investigate, understand, and that flower happens. So it's not just tolerating, it's investigating, embracing so you can understand, and then the wisdom flows. And from the worst of those situations, you get the most amazing, beautiful results. So, whatever it happens to be, which is painful, difficult, unsettling, irritating in your life, when we were young in Thailand, for us it was mosquitoes. Because everything else was inspiring. The food wasn't so bad, wasn't so good, but you know, you just ate that. That was just only just half an hour of the day, quarter of an hour a day, or one meal of the day. That's why we only ate one meal a day when it was in Thailand. It was so disgusting, you couldn't do that again during the day. But mosquitoes were there all the time. And even you have mosquito nets later on, they found a way of getting in there, and they just drove you crazy because it was persistent. And they were sadistic mosquitoes. The difference between an ordinary mosquito and a sadistic mosquito, the sadistic mosquito would come and buzz around your ear first of all, just to warn you, I'm coming, I'm coming, I'm coming. And even though being a Buddhist, you are supposed to be compassionate. And I was compassionate. Sometimes you just, okay, come on, get it over and done with. Come on. And so these mosquitoes, and this happened many, many times, you just watch them there and they put their nose in. And they would actually, some of those mosquitoes in town, they would actually sting. But you know, you had sort of, you were a tough monk, so you'd had them to put their nose in. And these blooming mosquitoes, I was going to swear there, but I restrained myself out of... They would put their nose down, and then they'd take it out again, walk a few steps, and do another bore somewhere else. They were so fussy, they were taking advantage of my compassion. You know, like people are sometimes, you know, they take advantage of you when you're kind to them. That's what these mosquitoes were doing, in and out, all over the place. So, gee, you know, you're really pushing your luck, mosquito. And it's a waste of time. You couldn't squash them as a monk. You couldn't swat them. But sometimes what you did, you try and flick them off. And of course, what they did when you flick them off, they just do a quick loop and land somewhere else. So that was a waste of time either. So after a while, when we used to complain to our teacher, Ajahn Chah, and these mosquitoes are just so difficult, he said, look, monks, call them your teacher. Ajahn Mosquito, we used to call them. Now, that's a wonderful teaching. And that was brilliant because I learned so much from those mosquitoes. For what irritated me, what caused me difficulty, that's what I learned the most from. At the time, I didn't like it. But now, I think, thank goodness for those mosquitoes. They taught me so much. They taught me actually how to meditate. Mosquitoes, because when I was first meditating, they would cover the body and they'd cause you so much irritation. I had to watch my breath. There's no way I could have a wandering mind, because they'd wander to the body and you start feeling all these terrible itches. When you watch the mind and just watch the breath, you couldn't feel the body. Later on I found out that because you were relaxing, you weren't irritated with these mosquitoes, because you were relaxing, your metabolism went down, you cooled off. And because you cooled off, you did not metabolize so much. Carbon dioxide was not secreted from your pores, and mosquitoes were attracted to the carbon dioxide. The more irritated you become, the more they would come to you. The more you relaxed, calmed down, the more invisible you would become. That's how I learned in the first lessons in meditation how to calm down, even with an irritating object. I learned so much from those. As we learn a lot from the irritating things of our life. So whenever you do have a difficult thing to deal with in your life, whether it's a partner, a child, parent, sickness, job, whatever, or it's some political issue, can't we call it teacher? Ajahn Osama bin Laden. There's something we have to learn there. As soon as we learn, you know, why these things happen, why it happened in the first place, isn't that much better than either just tolerating and bearing with it, because it never goes away that way, or trying to fight it with aggression, which again just makes the matter worse. That's one of the things, the problems. People think that's the only alternative. You can't beat them, just tolerate them. Now, investigation is far more important. Investigation is where we have growth. And that's certainly what our tradition always used to say. Whenever you have a sickness, don't just grin and bear it. Or, you know, grimace and bear it, more likely. But actually, investigate, find out what it feels like to be sick. Why it's a problem. Why you can't just allow it to be, if you can't get rid of it. There's a problem in the relationship. Don't just tolerate it. Investigate, work, find out. If there's a problem with life, investigate. Don't just tolerate. If we can do things like that, I think there's a great opportunity for growth and for solutions to be found. Even if solutions aren't found, we certainly become wiser and also more compassionate human beings who have more opportunities to react appropriately to the situations in life instead of always just being reacting out of the old ways. Through investigation comes wisdom, through wisdom comes growth and also compassion. We understand more, we become better human beings. And sometimes if you want to know what the meaning of life is, it is just learning, growing, understanding more. We learn from life, and that learning is part of the meaning of life. And often, if you're having a great time, and things are going well, and it's all happy, wonderful, you deserve that, but you're not learning very much. So when you're happy, and having a great time, and things are going well in your life, it's almost like a holiday. It's like a vacation from real life. But when things go difficult for you, it's like going back to work again. It's important to have holidays and vacations. But it's important to know also that when things aren't going so well, that is important too. That is where you do the work. That's where you make, if you like, your spiritual money, so the happiness, the peace, the bliss will come later on. Time of work is where you build the happiness of the future. So this is actually how we understand that tolerance is not just accepting the situation, not just trying to change it, but understanding it, investigating. What is it like being an Aboriginal? Being sort of a fundamentalist Christian? Being a jihadist? For a man, what's it like to be a woman? For a woman, what's it like to be a man? For a layperson, what's it like being a monk? For a monk, what's it like being a layperson? When is that understanding there? There's the opportunity to solve problems. When is just acceptance, sort of tolerance or whatever, bearing with and just not doing anything? I think that's stagnation, and I don't think we'll get anywhere that way. And I'm going to finish off, because this is the last talk for quite a few months, with a bonus, a second joke. Because once there was a doctor who was just so irritated and upset with one of his patients. He's what you call like a hypochondriac. Have you ever met a hypochondriac? Yeah, they're always complaining about something wrong. There's nothing there at all. And this doctor had tolerated this hypochondriac for months and months. By the way, that this joke is from Dr. John Tarrant. He's not here this evening, but he comes usually on a Friday night. I always like to acknowledge my donors who came with this joke. And this was a hypochondriac. This doctor had this hypochondriac. Every week he would come with a different ailment. And every week this doctor tolerated him, maybe gave him this placebo or that placebo, this test and that test. And after a couple of years, he had it up to here with this guy. So when this guy came in again, he was so irritated by this guy. He said, "I'm not going to tolerate you any longer. You are not sick. There's nothing wrong with you. It's all in your head." And at that, this patient, he was so shocked, he had a heart attack and died. And the doctor thinks, "Oh my goodness, I've killed this guy. I'm going to be sued for malpractice. I'm going to lose everything." And the doctor was in such shock, he sort of staggered out of the surgery, across the road and got hit by a truck. And he got killed as well. So the doctor died. So the two of them were buried in the same cemetery next to each other about the same time. A couple of days after he was buried, the doctor heard a knocking on his coffin. Knock, 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 knock. And the doctor said, "Well, leave me alone, I'm dead." But the knocking was persistent and persistent, wouldn't give in. So the doctor said, "Okay, I don't know who it is," but he opened the coffin lid. And of course, it's the ghost of this hypochondriac. He said, "Oh no, I'm dead, I thought I got rid of you. What do you want now?" And the hypochondriac said, "Doctor, doctor, have you got anything for worms?" So it shows you, just when you're irritated with something, if you don't understand it, it will keep persistently bothering you, not just in this life, but in the next life as well. Thank you very much for persisting with me. So, has anyone got any questions about tolerance this evening? Yeah. Okay, you're asking a question that where does acceptance come in to this talk on tolerance? I think the English word tolerance is usually meant to tolerate things which you find hard to accept. In other words, things which irritate you, upset you, make it difficult for you to be with that person or that thing. That's why we're not really enjoying it, we're not at peace with it, we're tolerating it. So I always use the word tolerance towards something which I'm not at ease with. Because, you know, if I'm with a friend, I'm not tolerating them. I'm enjoying their company. You know, if I'm in my hut, sort of, you know, meditating, I'm not tolerating my seclusion, I'm enjoying it. I think the word tolerance is always with something we're not accepting. If you're accepting it, I don't think it's tolerance anymore. So to get to that point of sort of acceptance and peace, I don't think you get to that just through tolerance. I think if you're tolerance, there's still no acceptance there. I don't think you will get to acceptance through just bare tolerance. Just, you're putting off solving the problem. So I think that really, I think the solution is, if it's something which is irritating, you find hard to bear, hard to accept, it may be some character trait in yourself, which you don't like something about yourself. It may be some past action or some present idiosyncrasy, something you don't like about yourself. Just to tolerate that. Just let's see the problem remain unsolved. But if you understand it, investigate it. Not tolerance, not trying to beat it down with violence. But trying to understand it. And then maybe you can come to acceptance if it's not really a problem. Or if it really is a problem, some, you know, bad, say like paedophilia. You can't accept paedophilia. You can't tolerate paedophilia. You have to understand, investigate, find out why that happens and find some solution. But I don't think you can find a solution without investigation, understanding. So not tolerance, not acceptance, but investigation, understanding. Punishment, there's maybe just a stopgap, but I don't think it's a long-lasting solution. Does that sort of answer your question? Okay. So, any other questions before we finish off? Okay, we've got one from Eddie in the back. Okay, Eddie. Okay. The highest virtues, patience, tolerance, and understanding. Sometimes, I was going to mention some of the Pali words here, but some of these Pali words, they've had very loose translations. I don't really think it means tolerance. It means, you know, you're patiently enduring a thing. In other words, even though it's painful, like say a mosquito bite, or sort of a sickness, or, you know, a relationship which is difficult, you're there with it. This is the patient endurance thing. But see, understanding, investigation, becoming wise from it has to be part of the solution. So I think the important thing there is not just being patient and just waiting for something to happen. It's not just bearing with it and saying, you know, how long is this going to last? The understanding, I think, of all those three is the most important. The highest virtue, yeah, but it's not like one or the other. they are together. It's not like you can be patient, or you can be tolerant, or you can be understanding. You've got like a choice, one of the three. I think they have to go together to be a highest virtue. Yeah, but sometimes they say they're highest, but then depends on which way you look. You know, sometimes there's always a higher mountain than the one you've been on now. The next peak looks a bit different. That's actually in Buddhism. They always say, like, this is the highest, and that's the highest, and this is the highest. And sometimes there's three things which are the highest. Or sometimes 10 things which is the highest. So this is just like the idiom of the ancient text. And what it means is it's really important. It's highest in this particular context. I think the three have to go together. The understanding is, investigation is the most important. What is this right now? Our investigation, okay, it's... Oh, that's right, yeah, good. Yeah, what is it? This is the example I've used to give in retreats. What is this? That's why it triggered this explanation now. Very often in retreats, I would hold up something. And I'd ask the people in the room, what is this? So, each one of you, what is this? Someone says, like, cup. Some say glass. Someone says, I've got a bit of water in it. Someone says, it's maybe, what was it, 4 inches? It's a cut-off cylinder. You keep on looking. And if you notice, the longer you look, the more you see. Because if you just said glass, you think you know it's a glass, and you wouldn't look anymore. What investigation is taking something, looking at it, not just once and giving it a name and thinking you know about it, looking at it and looking at it and looking at it, until you run out of names. And that's actually when you start to see interesting new things. So what actually is a glass? Do you know what a glass is? If you know what it is, you've stopped investigating. So you keep on looking and looking, and you see more and more new, interesting things. And just what is a glass? It's a simple thing. Now, who are you? You spend your whole life looking at that. Wow, this is interesting. I never knew that was there before. But if you think straight away, you know, I am Ajahn Brahm. I am a monk. I was born in England. I'm 56 and a bit years old. That's not me. So, who is this? It's a great experiment to understand, to investigate. But you don't stop when you get all these ideas who you are. Who are you anyway? I've seen you many, many times coming here. But if I think I know you, then my investigation has stopped. And our relationship is dead. That's why in a marriage or any other relationship, if you really think you know your partner, your marriage is ended. The relationship is dead. If you keep looking, you'll always find amazing new things in that person. And that's why the relationship never ends. You always find new things about them, and also with them about yourself. Look at the glass. Wow, I never thought that was there before. That's what I mean by investigation. And it's true that, I don't know, people who've been married 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and they tell me that sometimes they keep seeing interesting new aspects in that person they live with. I don't know, I've lived with me 56 years and I'm still finding out interesting new things about me, let alone other people. That's what we mean by investigating.
Arahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.